initials. JCD. My hands started shaking. I flipped the canvas. A note was taped to the back, handwritten on a small piece of paper imprinted with a hotel logo. Casa del Sol. Dear Amy, here's your proof. The danger has finally passed and James is safe. I've been asked to seek you out. It's time he learned the truth. Come to Waxaca. Lacey. James was alive? Oh my God. James was alive. I started shaking uncontrollably, almost losing my grip on the painting. Beads of sweat dotted my upper lip and brow, bile twisted low in my belly. What the fuck was going on?
There isn't any solid evidence James is still alive,
Ray's email had stated.
Don't waste your time and money. There isn't any reason for me to investigate further. I recommend calling off the search.
The facts Ray uncovered matched James's documentation and records. James's death occurred exactly as Thomas had reported. Then why the hell was James's painting in Mexico? I swiped at the tears I realized were running down my face and picked up the phone. I dialed the one person who would understand. Hello? Her voice sounded heavy from sleep. Kristen, James is alive. After I booked a hotel room in Puerto Escondido, I'd spent the rest of the night staring at the ceiling or pacing my room. I couldn't sleep. James was out there. Nadia woke me at 4:06 the following morning, pounding on the front door. I stumbled, bleary-eyed, through the house on 2 hours' sleep. About time, Nadia huffed after I opened the door. She pushed past me. Bet you didn't expect to see me at this godforsaken hour. She stopped in the middle of the room between the leather chairs. Dressed in bedazzled, juicy sweats and a wool scarf wrapped around her neck, she glared at me. I shut the door. Kristen told you. She called a couple hours ago. She's been up all night, worried, sick, you'd do something stupid. Her eyes darted toward the packed roller bag I'd stashed by the front door, such as fly off to Mexico by yourself. I raised my chin. You can't stop me. Waxaca, Mexico, not the safest place to travel. That's the same as saying the entire state of California is unsafe. I shook my head and walked into the kitchen. I might as well brew some coffee. There was no way I would fall back to sleep before my flight. Nadia followed me. Kristen's very concerned. She doesn't want you to go. So she sent you to change my mind. She knows you won't listen to her. I'm not listening to you either. I scooped grounds and set the pot to brew. My flight leaves this afternoon. I don't care what either of you have to say. I'm going. I headed toward the bedroom. Good. I stopped. What? She advanced on me, her makeup-free eyes narrowing on mine. I said good. I want you to go. Why? She squared her shoulders. You've been stuck in the mud since James died. I've not been stuck. Look around you, she exploded. I flinched like she'd struck me. It took a lot to get Nadia fired up, and she was obviously upset with me. James is everywhere. His clothes are still in your closet. His paintings decorate every fucking wall. You have got to move on. I've tried. Not hard enough. The restaurant. She waved in dismissal. Okay, so you opened a restaurant. Good for you. Great progress on the outside. But in here, she poked my sternum. You're stuck. You're a textbook case when it comes to grief. You've plowed through every stage but one. People die, Amy. There's nothing you can do but pick up the pieces and move on. Why can't you accept James is dead? He is not dead, I vehemently objected. She propped her fists on her hips and closed her eyes. Moisture glistened on her lashes. Listen, I get why you're doing this. After my dad left my mom, I had a really, really hard time getting over it until I accepted the fact he was gone. He'd left us. So I let him go, completely. Cut him off. She slashed a hand between us. But you know what the problem with that was? I slowly shook my head, hesitant, unsure where she was going with this. It was very easy for me to dump any guy who tried to get close to me.
I didn't trust them. They'd leave me too. Maybe not that day or a month from then, but eventually they'd tire of me and move on. So I'd move on before they got the chance to. Her breath hitched as she inhaled. You know what sucks about that?
What?
She folded her arms tightly in front of her chest. I'm lonely. There, I admit it, I'm really lonely. And I know you are too. You'll always be lonely until you can let James go. I stared at the floor, blinking rapidly. I was lonely, but my situation wasn't the same as hers. There have been more times than I can count when I've come close to boxing James's clothes, packing up his art supplies. They're covered in dust. It's been that long since I've touched them. I motioned toward the room James had used as a studio, the one I now used for my home office. Every time I try to get rid of his stuff, something stops me. Whether a gut feeling he is alive or hope he'll show up on my doorstep one day, I don't know. But that feeling is there and I can't ignore it. So you see, our situations aren't the same. You knew your father was never coming back. As for James, there's a good chance he's out there, somewhere, and I have to find out. I have to know for sure. That's why I want you to go to Mexico. She jabbed a finger at me. I want you to see how that psychic bitch has manipulated you. Maybe then, once you know she's been leading you on, lying to you about James, maybe then, you'll let yourself mourn. And finally, fucking move on. I stood motionless. There was the very real possibility Nadia was right. Lacey was manipulating me. What if I find him? Seriously? She cocked a brow. I crossed my arms. Her expression sobered. Assuming he's alive, have you ever wondered why he stayed away? I nodded. All the time. What are your plans? I glanced beyond her shoulder and locked onto James's meadow glade, the painting of Our Spot. The entire scene was done in shades of green, capturing our meadow on a crisp morning when winter had phased into spring. It was soft, warm and inviting, pristine, like the way I wanted to remember it. Not foul, the way we'd left it. The day after James had proposed, I'd taken down the painting. He was furious and insisted it remain. We had to keep up pretenses that nothing had happened in our meadow, that Phil hadn't come as close as he did to destroying our dreams. For James, the painting still hung on the wall. I wondered if Lacey somehow knew this when she sent the smaller original. I plan to tell James how much I love him. I miss him, and I want to bring him home. What if he doesn't want to come home? My gaze dropped to the floor. She harshly inhaled. You aren't planning to stay there. What about the cafe? You've worked so hard to get where you are. Are you going to just give it up? No, I didn't know what I would do. I loved my cafe and the new life I'd built, and I couldn't walk away. But I couldn't walk away from James either. Not yet. I had to find him, and I needed to know why he'd left. I have to go to Mexico. Nadia watched me for a long moment. She huffed, put hands on hips, and shook her head before wrapping me in a hug. She rested her chin on my shoulder. I know you have to go, but don't go alone. Wait here. She walked across the room and, opening the front door, motioned to someone out of view. Ian walked in, carrying a duffel bag and camera case. He dropped them on the floor next to my roller and cautiously looked at me. Nadia closed the door and stood by Ian. He's packed and ready to go, but he needs your flight and hotel info. I scowled, and she raised her hands in defense. His idea, not mine. He offered to travel with you. I groaned. This arrangement was ludicrous. Ian held up both hands. Don't worry, everything's been arranged at the cafe. Trish is filling in. She's there right now. Mandy will help too. Trish was my other shift manager, but I'd never left her in charge. Ian was supposed to be my go-to guy when I couldn't be at the restaurant. How was I supposed to leave Ian in charge if he was with me? Kristen and I will help open and close, as well as with anything else that comes up. Nadia volunteered. She chuckled, nervous. Hopefully, there won't be too many fires to put out. I gnawed my lower lip. My eyes shifted between them as they stared back. Ian shoved his hands into his jean pockets and walked over. He whispered in my ear, "Let's go find him." I frowned at the dejection in his voice. The longing for me I'd glimpsed from time to time in his expression was gone. I yearned to see it again. An emptiness spread from my chest and down my arms. Going after James is a mistake. The coffee maker beeped, and I jerked. Whatever I'd been thinking scattered away. I lowered my arms. "Well then, I hope you remembered your passport." Faster than a magician could pull cards from his sleeve, Ian whipped out his passport from his back pocket. "I never leave home without it." Part 2. The Emerald Coast, Puerto Escondido, Mexico. Chapter 17. After a 19-hour flight with two layovers, I checked into Casa del Sol, a boutique beachfront resort overlooking Puerto Escondido's Playa Zicatela, and waited in the lobby for Ian's flight to arrive. It was late Thursday afternoon, 2 days before the Torneo Internacional de Surf, something I hadn't been aware of in my rush to book a reservation. The tournament was one of many events taking place during Fiestas de Noviembre, an entire month of festivities celebrating local culture and traditions. The open-air lobby bustled with tourists and surfers, their boards propped against walls or left on the floor with other luggage. Suitcases rolled across adobe tiles. Boisterous laughter vibrated the salt-heavy air. Waves thundered beyond the arched doorways. The scent of ocean spray drifted into the lobby, clashing with the acrid body odor of travel-weary guests drenched in sunscreen. All of this faded into the background as I stood away from the crowd. Nerves pinged like firecrackers. I'd felt uneasy the moment I stepped onto the plane in San Jose, and was nauseous, my skin clammy, by the time the cab pulled into the hotel's parking lot. While I wanted to find James, I feared I would find him. His death and funeral had been a sham. For months, Thomas had lied to me and James had remained hidden. They'd let me and everyone else believe James had died. After all this time, and all the lies, would I want to take him back? I didn't have an answer. Feeling dizzy, I leaned against a support column and continued waiting for Ian, who'd taken a separate flight since mine had been fully booked. According to his last text, he was in a cab on his way over. A woman with chicory eyes and high cheekbones approached. Her midnight brown hair fell in sleek waves over slender shoulders, skimming the edges of the hotel manager badge pinned on her lapel. Her name tag read Imelda Rodriguez, and she gave me a glass of water. "Hola, señorita. Welcome to Casa del Sol." She frowned. "Are you feeling all right?" I graciously accepted the water and drank greedily. "Yes, I'm fine now. Thank you." "The humidity is an evil spirit around here. It sneaks up on you. Best to stay hydrated." She smiled and gave me the once-over. "Are you here for the torneo?" "The what?" I blinked. "Oh, no, I don't surf. Never have. I live near the ocean but haven't been in a long time. Not since..." James died. I buried my face in the glass and finished drinking, resisting the temptation to flash James's picture. Lacey's mention of danger hovered along the edges of my mind. Imelda took the empty glass from me. "What brings you to Puerto Escondido, then?" "Art." "Sí, very nice," she agreed. Her English, crisp and articulate, dripped with Spanish flavor. "Oaxaca has a lot to offer. Our village has much fishing and surfing, but there are a few galleries." "Can you tell me where this one is?" I dug into my bag for the postcard from Lacey and showed it to Imelda. "This is a good one. It is very close. You can walk from here." She pointed toward the front lobby archway to the road beyond the hotel's property. "Let me show you. Un momento."
She raised a finger and I followed her to a pamphlet kiosk by the concierge desk. She opened a map of Puerto Escondido and pointed to a spot between Playa Marinero and Playa Zicatela.
We are here, and you want to go here. The gallery is on El Aroquín, a street the tourists enjoy.
She tapped the map again, a different location.
This is our city hall. There will be music there tonight if you are interested, and dancing and a parade in a few days if you plan to stay until then. The festivities are fun.
I took the map, memorizing the route and surrounding roads before I folded the paper.
Here is the studio's brochure.
Imelda lifted a glossy postcard from the kiosk, larger than the one Lacey had sent me.
Carlos's work is exceptional.
J. Carlos Dominguez, El Estudio del Pintor's owner, wasn't pictured. But the card face featured several of the gallery's acrylic paintings. They weren't James's missing canvases, but the artistic style was similar.
Does Carlos feature other artists in his gallery? I asked. A local sculptor uses his floor space, but most is Carlos's art, acrylics and oils. Several of our artists have made quite a name for themselves within the Waxahachan art community. Is there someone you're looking for in particular?
An old friend. Imelda's smile faltered. Voices rose across the lobby, snagging her attention. Newly arrived guests expressing their unhappiness with the accommodations. They'd reserved a bungalow, not the junior suite.
Imelda turned back to me. Good luck finding your friend, and do enjoy your stay. Now, if you'll excuse me.
She walked away before I could thank her. A text message buzzed through. Ian had arrived. I met him outside the lobby entrance. His clothes were wrinkled and jaw unshaven. The entire flight, with layovers and delays, had taken him more than 22 hours. He looked as though a truck had dragged him several blocks. He waved when he saw me, his weary face splitting into a large grin. I smiled and waved back. He paid the cab driver and slung a camera bag over his head and shoulder while grabbing his luggage at the same time.
How was your flight?
He asked when he reached me.
Long, I said, groaning. Tell me about it, he complained.
He swung an arm toward the reservation desk.
Let me check in. Watch my bags.
He dropped them at my feet. Several minutes later, room card in hand, he returned to my side.
I need a beer.
I wrinkled my nose. You need a shower. The cafe on the terrace overlooks the ocean. Go clean up. I'll meet you there. He tugged his shirt to fan his chest.
Good idea.
20 minutes later, I was seated at a table with a view of the shore below. Large waves crashed into the white sand beach, stretching on either side of the resort. Palms rustled along the cafe's perimeter. My iced tea arrived at the same time as Ian. He scrunched his nose at my drink.
Really?
He held up two fingers for the waiter.
Dos cervezas. Sí, señor.
The waiter tossed coasters on the table and left to place the order at the bar. Ian had changed into linen shorts, a rumpled Oxford shirt, and flip-flops. His hair curled around his ears, still damp from the shower. He sat across from me, dropping a camera case on the chair between us and inhaled deeply.
God, I love Mexico.
I inhaled and only smelled Ian. The heat of arousal washed over me, strong and pure. I took a startled glance away and fixed my gaze on the pool patio.
You okay?
Yeah, I'm fine. I lifted the hair off my neck. It didn't do much to cool me down. The waiter returned with our beers. I pushed mine aside and raised my tea glass when Ian lifted his bottle. He frowned.
I'm not toasting over tea.
I don't want alcohol on my breath when I see James.
If you see him.
He took a long draw from his bottle and searched my face. My expression turned wary as I accepted the obvious. Ian wanted me as much as I wanted to find James, and I had to find him, or at the very least find answers to the questions about his death. It was the only way I knew how to move on. I showed Ian the new postcard. He cocked a brow.
Is this the studio?
I nodded. Don't these paintings look like James's?
Do you really think James has been in Mexico all this time painting? He studied the card and shrugged.
The style seems close, hard to tell. The pictures are too small.
I peered at the card. I can tell. He took another swig of beer.
All paintings look the same to me.
Like all your photos look the same as every other photographer's? He returned his beer to the table and grimaced.
Point taken.
I pushed the card back to his side. James once told me every painter has a distinct characteristic to their artistic style. Van Gogh painted in blots of color. Monet broke colors down to create the perception of light within the paint. Kincaid's painted lights look so authentic, his paintings seem to illuminate themselves. James had his own trait, too. Ian leaned over the table.
So, what am I looking for?
Acrylics were James's preferred medium. They dry faster than oils. On a big project, he'd mix a large batch of paint to ensure color consistency. One of the colors he mixed was a bluish green. He called it Le Bleu de mon bébé. Ian snorted.
My baby's blues?
I waved my hand dismissively. The color matched my eyes. Ian rolled his. I ignored him. James used it to sign his name on every painting, like this artist did here. I tapped a blotch of Caribbean blue on one of the images. Ian squinted, our foreheads almost touching as we inspected the postcard between us. He leaned away and sighed.
Are you sure you're not forcing yourself to see something? I can't tell.
Here, look at one of James's paintings. I scrolled through my phone's camera, landing on a photo of the Napa Valley painting where James's signature contrasted with the painting's yellow mustard fields. I gave Ian the phone. His face paled, and his gaze snapped to mine.
Where was this picture taken? Is this at the cafe?
My cheeks flushed. You haven't seen this painting. It's in my bedroom. This isn't a painting. He quickly flashed the screen. I caught a glimpse of blonde hair. Oh, sorry. I must have flipped the picture on accident. Let me find the right one.
Who's the woman?
He showed me the screen. It was the picture Kristen had taken of Lacey at the cafe's soft opening. She's the psychic counselor who told me about James. Her name is Lacey.
You mean Lainey.
When was she at the cafe?
The soft opening. Kristen took her picture.
Ian cupped a hand over his mouth. He stared hard at the photo, eyes narrowing.
I can't believe I didn't see her.
She didn't stay long. I looked at him, suspicious. By the way, her name is Lacey Saunders. He shook his head.
Lainey. Elaine Saunders. She's the psychic profiler my dad had hired. I've been trying to locate her for years.
I gaped. She's your angel? Why would she change her name?
Simple. She doesn't want to be found.
He returned the phone.
Will you text me the picture?
I nodded and tapped a few icons. At least there's one thing we know about her.
What's that?
He asked. His phone beeped with my incoming message. Lacey has been here. Her memo was on the notepaper from this hotel. Someone here had to have seen her. Maybe the hotel has her address.
Maybe,
he said, his tone distant. He lifted his face toward the ocean's horizon, lost in his thoughts. The untouched beer bottle sweated beside the barely touched iced tea. What the heck? I snagged the bottle. Let's toast. He dragged his attention back to me.
To what?
To us, and that we both find what we are looking for. Ian studied me, his expression leading me to believe he didn't want me to find what I was looking for. It would mean he'd lose any chance of having something more with me. I swallowed uneasily. He finished his beer and stood, tossing Mexican bills onto the table.
All right, then. Let's go find your painter.
Chapter 18. The Adoquin, the pedestrian walkway section of Avenida Alfonso Perez Gasca, ran parallel to Playa Principal. Bright, bold storefronts lined the street, and festival banners flew overhead. They crisscrossed the stone-paved walkway. Street performers stood on corners and banged steel drums.
We wove our way through tourists, my pace quickening with each step.
"What's the rush?" Ian asked.
He snapped a picture of a turquoise building striped in long shadows cast by the setting sun.
"It's getting late."
I jerked my head for Ian to follow and kept walking. The weekend's competition had attracted surfing fans from around the globe. South African accents mixed with Australian. Tourists congregated in the street. They ate, laughed, and danced. They were also in my way. Ian snagged my arm and yanked me back. He steered us away from a tourist jam, pausing to snap pictures of two old men. They puffed cigars in the doorway of a smoke shop. Their bellies hung low, exposed below the hems of their sweat-stained shirts. They looked unappealing and probably smelled worse. What did Ian find so fascinating about them, and why did he bother taking their picture? He would never show the photos at his exhibits. Ian released my arm and eased his pace.
"Take a breath. Look around. There's so much to see."
"I didn't come here to sightsee," I complained. He masked his face with the camera and pressed a button. Blinding light flashed. I saw stars. Shit. He adjusted the camera settings.
"I didn't mean to do that. Rookie move."
He played back the picture and chuckled, positioning the preview screen for me to see.
"Nice deer in the headlights look. Suits you."
"Stop taking pictures," I snapped. The studio was a couple of blocks ahead, according to the map Imelda had shown me, and I wanted to get there.
"Why?
The late afternoon light is perfect." I huffed impatiently, and he draped the camera around his neck.
"Chill, Ames. You're wound tighter than a roll of film."
He rubbed my shoulder.
"There's a good chance the studio's already closed."
He nodded toward the slipping sun.
"It seems I've had a change of travel plans. My next exhibit has to feature Puerto Escondido, Mexico. I have a surfing competition to shoot this weekend. I also want to get a few pictures of local landmarks and culture."
"But you don't exhibit photos with people in them."
"I might not have a choice this time,"
he said, as though he found the idea unsettling. Ian had planned to use his funds to travel to the rainforests of Costa Rica. Instead, he'd sacrificed his trip and followed me to Mexico. Because he cares about me. The thought knocked around my brain. I rubbed my face and sighed into my hands.
"I'm sorry."
"Don't be, but promise you'll enjoy the trip. Even if you don't find James, I need to know my money has been well spent." I nodded and lowered my arms. Ian was right. Just because James's paintings might be here didn't mean the man was. As Ian had suggested, I breathed deeply, inhaling cigar smoke and the scent of barbecued fish from the taco stand across the road. I made a mental note to add some Mexican flair to Amy's spring menu, and I let my body move with the drum's tempo. A small smile curved my lips.
"That's better."
Ian returned my grin and preserved the moment with a click of his camera. This time, the flash didn't go off.
"Let's get our bearings. Today's goal is finding the studio. Tomorrow you can approach Carlos after you've had a solid night's sleep. You won't be so...
tightly wound?"
"Yeah."
He dipped his head, looking at the camera in his hands. He tried to hide an amused grin. I scowled.
"You don't think I'll find him, do you?"
He looked up.
"I didn't say that. You think this is all a big joke?"
He held up his hands in defense.
"Hey, wait a second. Don't jump to, you don't want me to find him."
He sighed heavily, glancing down the street before turning back to me.
"I don't know what I want. I..."
He clamped his lips tight.
"You what?"
He dug his fingers through his hair. I continued to glare at him, and he shrugged a shoulder.
"I want to see you happy. I want you to live in the moment and smile spontaneously. Your entire face lights up. It's beautiful."
I blinked. His words left me breathless.
"You have that deer in the headlights expression again,"
he murmured, and started walking in the studio's direction. I stared dazedly after him. Several paces ahead, he stopped and turned.
"You coming?"
Yeah. Ian took pictures as we walked. I matched his steps, stopping when he did, and made a point to notice what was around me. He adjusted the camera settings and aimed the lens at an old building. I wondered what he found interesting about cracking Adobe, so I asked him. In response, he snapped my picture. "Stop!" I squealed and grabbed for the strap. He twisted away, laughing. "I haven't stopped since the day I started. What makes you think I'll do so now?" I fell into step beside him when he walked across the street, his gaze on some other object. "How did you start?" He told me once he had been interested in photography for as long as he could remember. "My dad was a sports photographer. I borrowed his camera without asking, took pictures of bugs in the backyard." He gave me a sheepish look. "Make that a lot of pictures." This was before digital cameras were commonplace, so when he developed the film, half the roll was of bugs. I'd been expecting the worst sort of punishment when he found out. Instead, he gave me his camera.
"He gave you the camera?"
I envisioned those expensive cameras I'd seen sports photographers use, the ones with the large lenses where a stand was required to hold the camera steady. "How old were you?"
8. And yes, he gave me his camera. It gave him the excuse to buy a new one he'd had his eye on, Ian explained. Then he stopped. "We've arrived."
He pointed at the sign painted on the building beside us. I stared at my reflection in the El Studio del Pintor front window. The studio was dark inside. As Ian had suspected, the gallery was closed. I blindly reached for his hand when my legs started shaking. His gaze met mine in the window and he squeezed my hand. "All's good, Ames. I'm with you every step." He craned his neck to look around the gallery's corner. "I think the entrance is off the courtyard." He tugged me along and flipped the latch on a wrought iron gate. Weathered hinges creaked from wear. Potted plants and tropical flowers filled the small courtyard. Bougainvillea scaled the walls, vines speckled with magenta, papery flowers reached for the sun. Water trickled from a glazed ceramic fountain, drowning the street noise. Two other retailers shared the courtyard, an upscale pottery and ceramic atelier, and a real estate agency, which had a door propped open. I tapped the studio's glass entrance above the sign, hanging on the other side. "What does it say?"
"Feeling inspired, gone fishing or painting or running. We'll be back soon, but probably later."
Ian grunted. "I can relate to this guy." I pressed my nose to the glass the way a kid does at a candy shop, cupping my hands around my eyes to cut out the glare. The studio wasn't half the size of Wendy's back home, but the art on display was breathtaking. "The paintings are beautiful." I sighed against the door, fogging the glass. Canvases of differing mediums, oils, acrylics, and watercolors covered two walls. Oceanscapes, sunsets, and what I assumed to be local landmarks. There were a few portraits mingled among them. From my angle, I couldn't see what was on the wall alongside me, and the window looking onto the main avenue took up the entire front wall. Sculptures on stained wood pedestals lorded over the gallery floor. A small wooden table was tucked into the far corner, littered with paint tubes, brushes, and paper, a petite easel propped on top. It reminded me of the craft table I had in my childhood bedroom. Behind a cluttered desk, stacks of newspapers and books crept up the back wall. "I wonder if Carlos will be back today," I said against the door, fogging the glass again. I wiped the surface with my forearm. Ian glanced around the courtyard.
"Hold on, let me check."
He disappeared into the real estate agency. I turned my attention back to the gallery and studied the paintings. Despite the different mediums, the style was similar. They'd been done by the same artist. From my vantage point, I couldn't read the artist's signature on the canvases. I stepped away from the door and rubbed the back of my neck, which was damp from a mixture of nerves and humidity. Through the real estate office window, I watched Ian converse with the agent on staff, but the courtyard fountain washed away their voices. I wanted to know when Carlos would return, and I wanted the name of the artist on those paintings. I especially wanted to check the hue of the blue signature pigment from the artwork featured in the gallery's pamphlet. I returned to the front and studied the pieces in the display window. There was a sculptured seagull diving into a wave, a framed watercolor where the artist had signed his name in the same gray hues as the rising sun painted on the textured paper, and an acrylic with a blue signature. I studied the painting's brushstrokes. As much as I wanted to believe James had created the artwork, I wasn't sure. There were similarities, but also vast differences. Unlike the paintings at home, where the technique had been controlled and understated, the brushstrokes on this canvas were erratic and carefree. Liberated was the word that came to mind, but the end result was a creation just as magnificent as those on my wall at home. Then there was the signature, the writing as erratic as the style. Either the blue pigment had too much green, or the window tint skewed the color. I needed to get inside for a better look. Ian came around the building, talking as he walked through the wrought iron gate.
The real estate agent said Carlos has a habit of closing early. He's training for a marathon.
Celine, she's the agent, saw him leave wearing those really small running shorts.
He held up his hands, fingers splayed, and squeezed the air as though squishing bread rolls. My eyes widened and he cleared his throat.
She did that, not me. Just demonstrating.
I rolled my eyes.
Celine doesn't expect he'll be back today, so we'll try again tomorrow. Early, okay? The sign on the door says he opens around 10.
He air-quoted. I pursed my lips and absently nodded. His face fell at my lack of enthusiasm. He tugged my right sleeve.
Come on, Ames. You should be happy. You're one step closer to solving the case of the missing fiancé.
I gave him an exasperated look.
He thumbed toward the window. I did find out, though, this is the art gallery. Carlos's studio is the apartment upstairs. He teaches art classes up there.
I sensed Ian watching me, but I couldn't pull my attention from the acrylic painting in the window. Maybe if I stared hard enough, the signature color would change. Was the lighting wrong, or was I forcing myself to see something that wasn't there? Ian shuffled his feet.
What's wrong?
I tapped the lower corner of the window. The blues don't match. I had hoped. My voice fell. Hoped what? I'd find James madly painting, thankful I'd found him, and whisk him home? What an unrealistic pipe dream that was. I sank onto the wood bench below the window. Ian eased down beside me and wrapped his arm around my shoulder.
You'll get your answers tomorrow.
He glanced at his watch and nodded toward the market half a block away.
Let's get something to eat, and some beers. We'll take them to the beach and watch the sunset.
I found myself smiling.
More pictures?
He grinned. Absolutely. You go ahead and get the food. I'll wait here. I wasn't ready to leave. I sagged against the window and slid on my aviators. Ian patted my leg.
Back in a few.
He stood and departed, but halfway across the street he jogged backward.
Don't do anything stupid, he yelled.
I waved him off and watched passers-by behind the security of my sunglasses. My phone buzzed with a new message, one of many waiting in a queue of unanswered texts and voicemails I'd received in the last 24 hours. I retrieved the phone from my shoulder bag. Another text from Kristen.
Call me.
I scanned through the incoming log. Most of the voicemails were from Kristen. I should listen to them. I should have listened to her and never come. Had I set myself up for the ultimate disappointment? Scrolling through her text messages, I scanned the most recent ones.
I can't believe you're flying to Mexico. Did you arrive okay?
Where are you staying?
What's Puerto Escondido like? Have you found anything out yet?
Have you found him? There was a voice message from Mom.
Why, Mexico, Amy? James is dead. You're chasing ghosts. We're worried about you. Please come home.
I called Kristen. She picked up on the second ring.
Oh, my God. I can't fucking believe you took off. What the hell were you thinking? Crap. Your customers are looking at me funny. Hold on. Let me go into your office.
I heard the rustle of her clothes as she entered the office and closed the door. Hello to you, too, I said when she was back on the line. She took a deep breath.
I'm pissed off you didn't listen to Nadia. You put too much trust in Lacey. God, you don't know that woman.
What if she's a murderess? You can be her next victim. Why did you go?
You know I had to. Besides, Nadia agreed. She what?
Kristen swore.
She was supposed to talk you out of it.
She didn't tell you?
No, she left out that minor detail when she told me we had to help at the cafe.
She paused, and I imagined her pinching the bridge of her nose as she always did while thinking.
Jeez. Are you all right?
I'm fine.
Where are you now?
Sitting on a bench in front of El Studio del Pintor.
And?
And nothing. The gallery's closed. We have to come back tomorrow morning. Ian's buying dinner, and I'm waiting. How's the cafe?
Crowded. Busy, but that's good, right?
It's wonderful, I said, longing for the routine.
Will you call me tomorrow? No, wait, I'll call you. Keep in touch, Kay. I'm worried about you.
We said our goodbyes and I tucked the phone away. I watched people saunter by, stopping at the gallery window to peer inside. Others hurried onward, faces lowered as they ignored the festive energy around them.
Slow down. Take a look around you. There's so much to see, so much to soak in.
Ian was right. I'd been rushing to a finish line and I'd failed to enjoy the run along the way. How much time had I wasted on James? The postcard and painting didn't prove he was alive, so I tried looking for answers in places they probably didn't exist, like the blue paint in the signature and the paintings that resembled James's style. Everything was slightly off. Like the man running toward me. He looked similar to James as he slowed to a jog and eventually a fast walk. He checked his sports watch. Sweat drenched his sleeveless workout shirt, molding the fabric to his chest. An iPod was strapped to his upper arm, the headphone wire coiling up his back to the buds in his ears. I stood on unsteady legs as he approached.
Hola,
he mouthed, smiling as he passed. I stared, mouth agape. He stopped and yanked the bud from his right ear.
¿Está usted bien?
I didn't say anything, only stared. His eyes perused my length.
American?
He asked, his accent thick.
Are you all right? You look like you've seen a ghost.
Chasing ghosts. My heart pounded in my ears, the blood in my face pooled into my toes. I felt dizzy, swaying slightly. He stepped closer, bending slightly to peer into my shaded eyes through his own wraparound sunglasses.
Can I help you with something?
His words were warm, exotic. They rolled off his tongue. This was insane. He'd been right here, all this time, all along, for 19 fucking months. A storm of questions brewed inside me, but I could only speak his name. James. He stretched upright to his full height, exactly 6'1", a large, all-too-familiar grin spread across his face.
I see. I'm the ghost.
He extended a palm, glistening with perspiration.
I'm Carlos.
Chapter 19. I collapsed on the bench. Why did you leave? I cried. Fuck, James, I buried you! An overwhelming urge to smack him and hug him fiercely warred inside me. He stood a good 3 feet from me, turning his head as though searching for someone. He wiped sweat from his brow with the back of his hand and frowned at me.
Why are you looking at me that way?
He stared as though he'd never seen me before.
Touch me,
I hiccuped.
Hold me.
I hiccuped again, my throat locking on to the oxygen. I inhaled again and again. Short, jerky breaths that strained my lungs. I couldn't exhale.
Oh my God, I can't breathe.
I pounded my chest. He lowered onto his calves. His lips moved, but I couldn't make out the words. I clawed his shoulders.
Touch me, James.
He did, grasping both wrists. His lips moved again.
What?
Calm down, he mouthed. I focused on his lips, those beautiful lips.
Please, senorita, calm down.
I felt a hand behind my head, forcing my face between my knees. Stars burst behind my eyelids. My lungs suddenly worked again. I sucked in the saltiness of the ocean air and his scent. God, his smell. My James. His hand eased from my head. He lifted his shades and my breath hitched. James's eyes locked onto me.
That's it. Focus.
He smiled. James's smile.
James,
I whispered. Happiness burst inside me. I found you. He shook his head, but kept the grin.
Focus on me. Listen to my voice. Breathe in.
He inhaled, nostrils flaring, and I mimicked.
Good. Now breathe out. Slowly.
His thumb brushed the inside of my right wrist, directly over the ulnar vein. The butterfly touch turned my arm to jelly.
Close your eyes and listen to my breathing,
he instructed, and my lids slid down. The world went dark, and the street sounds faded away. There was only the two of us, the way we used to be. The strong, wide hand holding mine felt like James's. His breathing sounded like James's, the steady, relaxed rhythm, the way it had been when he woke beside me in the morning. But he didn't sound like James when he told me to open my eyes. His voice was smooth and rich, but the tone grated on my frazzled nerves. Underneath the thick accent, the sound was deeper, raspier, aged. His dark brown hair was pulled back in a rubber band. A pinkish scar starting at his left brow slashed across his cheekbone. His frame was leaner, but his mannerisms seemed the same, such as the way he tilted his head to search my face. I swallowed.
James?
He smiled.
No, sorry.
My lip quivered.
It's me, James, Amy. Don't you recognize me? I wish I did. You're not someone who's easily forgettable.
He chuckled. I scowled and flipped up my sunglasses. Damn it, James, look at me! He did. A split second of confusion skirted across his eyes before disappearing. There was no recognition, only concern.
James?
I whimpered.
My name's Carlos. I believe you've confused me with someone else.
I gaped at the man kneeling before me, and he blankly stared back. He felt nothing for me. He didn't know me. A tear fell, and Carlos gently pressed his thumb against the hollow of my cheek, wiping the moisture away. I found the touch repulsive. This man was a stranger. He nodded toward the studio behind me.
This is my gallery. Do you need water or anything? A phone?
I needed to get away. I had to regroup, think about what to do next. Go home. My heart sank.
Is there someone you're with?
No, I automatically replied. Then I nodded, pointing toward the market. My friend, Ian, he's shopping. He stood and offered his hand.
Do you want me to walk with you to the market?
No, thank you. I stood without his assistance.
Will you be all right?
His eyes danced over me. I didn't give him an answer because I didn't have one. Feeling defeated, lost and confused, I walked away from James, or Carlos, or whoever the hell he was. Ian found me in the produce section. He blinked, as though surprised to see me, and not quite sure why I was there. I held a strawberry in each hand, rolling the fruit between my fingers. Ian's gaze jumped from my hands to my face. Worry clouded his gaze.
What's wrong, Amy?
My mouth screwed downward. He shifted the food basket to his other hand.
What happened?
My lower lip quivered, and I lowered my hands. The fruit plummeted to the floor and I fell apart. Ian dropped the food basket and caught me in his arms. I sobbed against his chest.
I didn't want him to let go. At Playa Marinero, lying atop a wool blanket Ian had purchased from a street vendor, we watched the sunset. The fiery orb tucked low on the horizon against a backdrop of orange and pink hues that painted the sky. Waves gently kissed the shore. Ian devoured his fish tacos, mumbling how starved he was with every bite. In between tacos, he snatched up his camera and took pictures of the vivid scene playing before us. I picked at my salad, pushing around beans and avocados, my appetite long gone. These tacos are amazing. Amy's needs to do something like this on the menu. It's the sauce, I think. The chipotle adds some kick, Ian said, his words muffled around a mouthful of fish and tortilla. He frowned when I closed the lid on my to-go container. Aren't you eating? Maybe later. I propped my chin on bent knees and flexed my feet in the sand. The granules, sun-warmed on the surface, were cooler several inches below. They tickled as they sifted over my toes. I tried to feel James's touch in the brush of sand, or hear his voice in the breeze. For the first time since I'd buried him, I sensed nothing. I'd never felt so completely alone. Ian chin nodded toward the ocean. The waves aren't too bad here. What do you think, 1 or 2 feet? Down the beach, over at Cicatella by our hotel where tomorrow's competition will be, I read the swells can reach 30 or 40 feet. He shoved a third of his taco into his mouth and mumbled, "That's intense, man." I closed my eyes, soaking in the day's final rays of heat, because my heart felt cold. I sensed his arm extend in front of me, shadowing my face. Down the beach there, over at Playa Principal, see all those fishing boats? A woman at the market told me we can pick our fish right off the boats, watch the men clean them, and follow them to the restaurant where they'll cook our dinner. Talk about fresh. We should check it out before we go home. Home. Without James. Ian ate his last taco in silence while I replayed the evening's events in my head. When he was done, I heard him wipe his hands and put the food container aside. I then sensed him studying me. "Are you sure it was James?" he asked for the umpteenth time. "Yes." "No." I shrugged and murmured against my knees. "I don't know. Carlos looked like him, well, sort of. His face is scarred." I drew a finger along my temple and across my cheekbone. Ian aimed the camera lens at the radiant sliver visible where the black ocean met the darkening sky. He pressed the button. "If he is James, he would have recognized you. There should have been a reaction from him." "You would think so," I said in a flat tone. "Maybe he has amnesia." "Then he would have been more curious about you. He'd wonder if you were someone from his past." "He acted like he had no memory loss at all. It was like he was a completely different person." Ian stilled. His gaze sliced into me. I leaned away. "What?" He shook his head. "Nothing." He turned back to the horizon and held the camera against his face, but he didn't take any pictures. He seemed lost in his thoughts, miles from the sandy shores of Puerto Escondido. Chapter 20. El Estudio del Pintor didn't open for another 2 hours, but I had spent the past 20 minutes studying Carlos as I would his paintings. I stood across the street, watching him through the gallery's large front window. He rearranged frames on the wall. Every so often, he stopped to inspect the changes, clasping his hands behind his neck or absently rubbing his forearms, just like James. At one point, Carlos retreated to the back room, so I leaned against a lamppost and waited for the gallery to open. Tourists milled toward the beach, carrying towels and smelling of sunscreen. I pretended to read a paperback novel. Another 20 minutes went by with no further sign of Carlos. I'd reached the end of the 285 pages I'd scanned at lightning speed. My patience was also at an end. I tucked the book away and crossed over to the gallery. The closed sign Ian had translated yesterday still hung in the entrance window, but I went inside anyway.
The bell above the door jingled, and I held my breath, waiting for Carlos. He didn't show, so I walked around. Would I find James's stolen artwork? I stopped before an acrylic on the opposite wall and studied the artist's initials, JCD. The painting Sunset reminded me of James's Half Moon Bay piece, but the signature wasn't exactly like James's. The angle of the initials too steep. I finished circling the room, ending at the desk in back. Books stacked against the wall spanned many genres and years, from Stephen King to Shakespeare. Spanish-titled novels and art instruction manuals in English. Runner's World, Outside, and Sport Fishing magazines had been piled into three separate towers. Scattered on the desk were order forms, several issues of the local newspaper, and a collection of dirty coffee mugs. A brochure listed Carlos's art workshops, ranging from beginning techniques to advanced brushwork.
Ya cerramos, came a voice behind me.
We're closed. I whirled and faced Carlos. He froze in the doorway to the other room. A smile slowly appeared.
Hola, señorita.
He came into the main room.
I was wondering if I'd see you again. Amy, right?
He asked, switching to English. I nodded and slipped the brochure into my back pocket. Turpentine and wood oil permeated the air between us, drifting from the soiled cloth Carlos held as he worked dried paint from his fingers. He wore low-slung jeans and a screen-printed shirt from last year's surf tourneo, and he was barefoot. Barefoot, sun-kissed and sexy. Heat flared across my chest and neck, spreading faster than a wildfire. I'd spent the past 45 minutes spying, but hadn't prepared for the sight of him standing before me, from the waves on his head to the curve of his brows and the ridge of his nose. The bone had been broken once. The alignment wasn't quite right.
Still thinking I'm your James?
He asked in a light tone. I blinked. I'm sorry. You look so much like him. Carlos's eyes sparkled.
He must be very good looking.
He was. I mean, is. His expression turned wary.
How are you feeling today?
Better, thank you. I regarded the gallery. You're quite talented. Where did you study?
Mostly self-taught. Some time ago, I took courses at an institute north of here.
How long has your gallery been open?
A couple years.
He rubbed hard at a stubborn spot of paint on his right palm. Look at me, remember me.
How long are you in Puerto Escondido?
He asked. Several days.
What brings you here?
Searching for a friend. We've lost touch. He hooked the cloth in his belt loop.
Have you found this friend?
That same question had churned in my head all night. I'd hardly slept. No, I haven't. Not yet. He offered a smile.
I hope you find him.
I hope he remembers me. Me too. Over Carlos's shoulder, I glimpsed a painting that looked like one James hadn't finished. A woman, blissfully poised at the ocean's edge. Carlos's scene was bright and colorful compared with the one at home. James's acrylic had been done in grays and browns, the woman awash in despair. Can I show you something? I dug through my shoulder bag for my phone. I wanted to find a picture of James's painting and compare his artistic style to Carlos's. I flicked through the camera roll and landed on my engagement photo. My hand faltered, leaving the photo to stare back at me.
What have you got?
Carlos peered over my shoulder. What the hell? I showed him the screen. This is James. Do you see how much you resemble him? Carlos frowned and cupped my hand to bring the phone closer to his face. He studied the screen, and I studied him, waiting for a reaction. A frown, a raised brow, a slight dilation of his pupils, anything to tell me he'd been caught hiding something. He didn't reveal a thing. Oh, James, what happened to you? He looked up from the phone and gave me a sad smile.
James was important to you.
I nodded, my throat tight.
There's a resemblance, isn't there? Our noses are different, though. I have a higher forehead, too. His eyes crinkle